Copyright Forum of Christian Leaders. The contents contained on this website are solely for your own individual, non-commercial, and informational use. Any other use is strictly prohibited without our express prior written consent. See the full copyright disclosure at focalonline.org.
Can we start with you, Julia? You're from Ukraine. You were not here the first session, so we had a lot of fun with Scott about the intercultural teams. Can you tell us a little bit about yourself and your ministry in Ukraine?
Yes. Hello, my name is Yulia. I am from Kyiv, Ukraine, capital of Ukraine. I'm general secretary of IFES, National Movement in Ukraine. Mm. It's called SSH. Who knows a lot of Ukrainian people, I see. Mm-hmm. I was involved already like 9 years as a minister before I was teaching physics mathematics in Christian school. Mm-hmm. That's all, or what else?
Can you say a little bit about the intercultural experience in the IFES movement in Ukraine?
Our organization already 25 years exists, and all time you have missionaries from another country, often, mostly either from America, but on the other hand, we send it Ukrainians to another country. And for example, one couple, a wife and husband, was 5 years in Georgia as a missionaries. And now 1/4 strategic initiative of our ministry is missionary, and we prepared students and sent them to the another country. We chose two countries, Georgia and Moldova, with which we carry and develop them. And my personal experience, I'm lead this team, and I was student staff worker in Crimea. And there was a lot of Tatars, Muslim people with which I work, and So,
do you have a lot of foreign students in Ukraine?
Yes, and yeah, actually we have part of our ministry is to help foreign students. Yeah, of course, the ministry for them. Mostly students is Chinese from Iran, Iraq.
And then I assume that Ukraine is also a multicultural country with the Tatars and the Russian speaking and the Ukrainians. So we're very excited to have you here.
Yeah,
welcome. And then Scott, tell us something that we don't know about you.
In my time in Africa, I was part of a team of people, faculty, at school where we had a Ugandan, some Kenyans, and Americans. So we had a large multicultural team. There were 9 of us on the team. And we had a lot of interesting dynamics. So I learned most of my ideas on multicultural teams through the mistakes that I made and saw being made. And now when I teach at Wheaton, we're very small classes right now. So I had 7 students in a class in the fall, and they were from 5 different countries. So it's not a team because they're not working together as a team on a project or things like this, but it also provides us a good opportunity to think through what it means to be a multicultural situation as students.
Well, thank you for sharing that, because then we see that it's not just research and theory. Yeah, you've been on the ground and you've been in Africa for many years, and then you become a part of a multicultural team. Okay, and then we have Siri, she's from Norway. Tell us a bit about your ministry and the exchange program that you lead.
Yeah, I work at a school who is owned by 3 different Christian organizations. And one of them is IFES Norway, called Lage. This is the name of IFES in Norway. So I worked there as a teacher, and all together at the school, we received between 60 and 70 young people between 19 and 27, 28 years old. They are students for 1 year at our school, but the main part of the learning experience is when they go abroad for internship for 6 months or more than 6 months. Mm-hmm. So that's the main place where they learn cross-cultural communication. And we don't only have Norwegian students, we have students from 10 different countries. So from day number one, when they come to the school, they are put into dormitories with people from all over the world. They have to share rooms with people from other countries. They go to the classrooms to do teaching together with other countries, cultures, yeah. And then we train them before sending them out to work and to live in another culture.
Yeah. Thank you. And then we have Todd. He was not on the list in the program, but he's a part of the leadership team in the network. And so yesterday we asked him if he was able to share some experiences. He's so experienced in multicultural teams in Europe. So please tell a little bit about your experience.
Okay. So I lead an organization that's a North American organization. So it's been a bit of a struggle for us to become more multicultural, but it's something that we've been working harder at to try to develop. So three of our 25 teams across Europe are significantly multicultural, and we found out that we're not doing a very good job of this. So we're working harder to figure out how to do a better job of this. And one of the things that I personally have been involved in is I meet with movement leaders to try to create more like ad hoc teams, not long-term teams. But a month ago, I pulled together a leader from Sweden, Romania, Ukraine, and Germany. We met in a house for 3 days, and we worked on disciple making together in each of their contexts. So we're trying to do more and more to help with the multicultural aspect and to learn from that.
Did you recognize the graphics and the
oh yeah, it was
stereotypes.
Quite interesting, yeah. Yeah.
It's one question I didn't give you beforehand, but I like to ask that. And if you don't want to share, then you're free to not share. But Todd, I'll start with you. Can you share your worst team, intercultural team experience? Do you have any example of this is the worst case ever?
I got a couple really bad cases, but the worst probably was when I first came to Poland. And, you know, you're learning the language and you're understanding what things mean. And there's a formal language and informal language. And I had a friend that I was developing a relationship with, and I used the word friend in the American sense. And he actually said, I think that we should be friends and we're going to move to the informal relationship. And I said, that's great. And I had no idea what that meant. So I was a terrible friend. And I deeply offended him because I didn't understand the obligations that I entered into when we got to that level of friendship. So that's been quite meaningful to me to realize the mistakes that I've made and the damage that I've done through not being culturally sensitive, not being aware of what's going on.
How would you characterize the typical Eastern European leader?
Oh, that's dangerous.
You can talk to him afterwards.
Wow. So I would say that the most of them, well, okay, the typical Eastern European leader has a heart for God, is passionate for seeing God made famous, displayed in their realm, their domain. They're generally quite lonely in that. They don't feel like they have a lot of close friends. They feel that they have a huge burden laid upon them, and they don't have a lot of resources to help them in fulfilling that call. Their context works against them and what they think God's calling them to do.
Julia, do you recognize that description? You're an Eastern European leader.
I didn't. I don't know. I didn't. Leadership. Sorry, I just
focused. The leader standing alone.
My wife says the same thing all the time.
Like a leader standing alone with a lot of responsibility on his or her shoulders.
It's independent from environment. And yeah. It's about church, about organization, but. It's not about Eastern Europe, and maybe every leader is alone because he is leader or she is. Mm-hmm. But in Eastern Europe, it's very important. In Christianity, mostly of leaders came from America or from abroad and trying to show own example. And for us, it's very important to apply and to be in own way as the leaders. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And to be connected with culture is very important.
Mm-hmm. I have one question about what can go wrong in the multicultural teams. And Siri, you've been training teams with different nationalities for 10 years now. Mm-hmm. So what can go wrong with the youth that comes to help?
What cannot go wrong? if they are not aware of the cultural differences in general, I think we have to start there. They have to know that different cultures have different values, have different worldviews. So this is very important, and also to know that they have to be open to learn from each other and be willing to learn. And we have a, thank you, we have a keyword at our school, it's one of our values, and that is to respect each other. To respect means to look, or to respect, we say, means to look one more time. And we say that so often to our students that when differences come up, look one more time. Mm. Try to understand, what is this? What does this other person mean when he's saying this? Or why did he act like this? Why did he behave like this? Try to understand, look one more time. Ask mm-hmm. questions instead of judging and saying that he is lazy or she's not paying attention, or just assume things. Yeah, respect each other by looking one more time and try to find out what are the differences, like you teached about. Mm-hmm. Try to look for these and be willing to learn from the differences that are there in the team.
So what you're saying is that if we have this roadmap here, mm-hmm. we're not supposed to stay in the honeymoon phase, the mm-hmm. the exciting and the challenging, funny, exciting phase, but we're supposed to enter the conflict zone when we work in multicultural teams. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And actually the part of the learning is in that.
And we, if I can continue, we do that a lot at the school. We put the students together and we give them tasks that they are supposed to do, and they come to us and say, oh, it's so difficult to work together. Because you know this girl from China, she doesn't say anything in a brainstorming. And we Norwegians, we have to take all the responsibility, and the Africans, they do this and blah, blah, as they are working together to achieve something. Mm-hmm. And they perform perfectly in the end, but the road mm-hmm. to the result is very difficult. And then we answer, yes, very good. This is what you are supposed to learn. This is a school in cross-cultural communication, and we kind of have to put them together and let them work together to kind of explore the differences. And then guide them and lead them, of course. Mm.
Mm. Scott, what's the typical challenge that they face in multicultural teams when they just entered this conflict zone from the honeymoon phase?
Yeah, being able to continue to think positively about the other person. And I think it ties very well into the respect question, to ask them to look again. I find if they look again, but they're still stuck on the, they are, this person is wrong because, But if you keep asking the question in a positive way, it forces, what's the reason behind what they're doing? What are possible explanations besides the fact that this person is a sinner? Or they're wrong, or they're lazy, or they just want to control me, or they don't want to do any of the work. Is there a better explanation? And it doesn't mean that people are not sinful, and that people don't bring baggage and brokenness with them when they come, but it does mean that typically there's a better explanation for the one I imagine in my head. And providing people with tools to get those better explanations, I think, is very important to do, and very hard to do as well, too.
Mm-hmm. So when you look at the person the second time, mm-hmm. with respect, mm-hmm. What can you learn? I used to work at the same, not the same, but the same type of school as Siri is working in. Mm-hmm. When they came from abroad, and we had them 10 weeks at the school before the summer holiday, mm-hmm. we strongly challenged them on the, what did you learn by all the mistakes? And mm-hmm. and even making them write down lessons. Mm-hmm. So in the IFES, when the students come and want to work and think it's their way is the only way, and they face these challenges and enter the conflict zone in the team, what do they learn?
You speak about students, or mm-hmm. Because we have missionaries like staff who work with students, and maybe in this way more experience, and we had very, very terrible experience one time because we did mistake. We didn't say same rules for the missionaries and for all ministers, mm-hmm. but my recommendation should be same. For example, one guy started to have sexual relationships with coupled students. And in same time, he was missionary, and he hid this from mentor. Mm-hmm. And it was like horrible experience. What we learned after this, first of all, is very often missionary could have wrong motivation to go mm-hmm. to mm-hmm. Another country. Mm-hmm. And very often, for example, to look for beautiful girls, I don't know. And what I noticed, very often in missionaries not very prepared and not very mature Christians. Mm. And I saw when their motivation to come to another country is to become a better Christians. It's wrong mm-hmm. way to be missionary. Mm-hmm. You should be strong Christian. Mm-hmm.
And in your office, you are a multicultural team.
Yes.
In the staff as well.
Yeah, we have 22 staff, and five of them is foreign, other foreign. Yeah.
So can you tell us a bit about what's the strength of being a multicultural team in the staff?
Some of them I wrote for me. It's very interesting because it's like when you have foreign people in our situation, for students it's like zest, because students, they wanted to go to the event because there was foreigners and they wanted to practice English or to learn something new. What is another strength is very often missionary could help you to see your situation from another side, from mm-hmm. fresh side. Mm-hmm. Very often we are blind and to see our situation only from another or from one way, and they very often could help in this. And missionary from abroad could bring very fresh idea, like something like opposite from we do. And another strength I could say, they try to do ministry very active, very enthusiastic, and it motivate our staff workers to do in same time similar.
This is what this is what Scott calls the effective synergy. Can you, or this Globe research as well. Can you unpack a little bit more about that? The strength of being a multicultural team.
Yeah. One of the frames of reference is that each person is perhaps bringing a different vantage point. We do this as individuals already, even if we're from the same culture. But the spectrum is so much wider when they're coming from different cultures. And so you don't have to be stuck in traditional Ukrainian or American solutions. You can look to solutions that, oh, we did this in Turkmenistan in ways that we wouldn't have ever thought of in Kyrgyzstan. So you've got multiple ways to do that. I think also you often demonstrate, if it's a good team, you can demonstrate to the local people that it's possible to get along and do well together. You're less likely to be seen as some type of political activation force. Because it's, and I'm thinking for this for Americans a lot of times, Americans often can face accusations of being spies or CIA, especially in Muslim settings. How are you staying here? You don't have a business, you don't have any income, you've got a car, you travel a lot, you must be either CIA or independently wealthy. Well, if you're an American connected to people who are outsiders themselves, there's less likely that, because it's hard to accuse a Korean of being CIA, a Brazilian of being CIA. Now, again, that's a very political type of motivation, which is not necessarily a synergy. But the synergy for me, if the team respects each other, suddenly I can do things in ways I never thought of before. Because my sister from another country would say, oh, let's do it this way, I think. That's an idea I never would have come up with. That's when I get excited about seeing things happen and people going. Yeah.
See, this is something about the result becomes better.
Yeah, and I think it's a little bit the same as when, even though you have a team of people who are from the same culture, it's always easier to work with people who are the same personality as yourself. Then you agree on everything. But the outcome is not very good. But if you put together people who are different in the way they behave, in how they work, what are their strengths, then the outcome will be much better. Even the working road will be harder. And I think that's the same for cross-cultural teams as well. It's a more difficult process to work together, but the outcome is much better.
So what you're saying basically is that mission is like God's project to make us work together on a different or a quite difficult task, and that the aim will become...
And God created us differently. And I think the value of the diversity among people and also among cultures are really important to bring up.
Is that your experience as well, Todd? That the result is becoming better when you have differences?
I think it's, you asked me for the worst cross-cultural experience. I think one of the best cross-cultural experiences I had was as a North American mission organization, we had a Guatemalan leading our work in Europe. And it was revolutionary for our team, because we were seeing things through our North American lens, no matter how much we had enculturated in the different countries where we were working, we still had that kind of a bent to our meetings together. But when we had someone leading us who was from a different culture, it made us look at the world completely differently. And it shaped the way that we thought about our strategies, it shaped the way that we thought about our personnel, it shaped the entire way that we approached our role in Europe.
I think that's very interesting, because I asked one question to these people on beforehand. How do you pick the right people for the most efficient team? So I want to ask you guys that question just to think about it while a couple of these will answer. When you pick your team, do you look for people who look like yourself and act like yourself and think like yourself? Or do you look for diversity when you pick your members or the team members? Julia, when you pick your team, what do you look
for? Yes, I look for fat people. It means faithful people, available, and teachable. It's really very important, and it's same rules for students and for staff workers, for missionaries, because people really could be should be devoted for this ministry, should free your time and be available, and if they are teachable, you will have success. It's short. You will remind this. Fat people.
Should write this down. Scott, according to the academics and the researchers, what should we look for?
Well, perhaps also you can think of things to avoid. When we did comprehensive exams in our department, we'd split students into groups of four, and we tried to choose teams that we thought would work well together. But sometimes you have a very strong personality. You don't want that person with three very timid personalities, because that's not a good team. That will be one person dominating the others. And sometimes then we would take a strong personality and put them with three other strong personalities, because they would bounce off of each other, but they would figure out how to work it through. And so being careful to watch that, but you have to know somebody well enough to know. Often mission organizations might not know their personnel well enough early on in to say this would be a good teammate to add to this situation. But I think people who are able to learn and to listen is a key component of that. So that faithful, available, teachable, learnable. But you know, a teachable ties very much into that able to listen element. So I want fall people instead of fat people.
Other comments?
Yeah, it's a little bit the same, but to have people who are ready to go out of their comfort zone. Mm-hmm. And by that I mean they have to be ready to do something that they are not familiar with. We often say that all the fun is outside the comfort zone. That's when you do mistakes, but that's also where you gain new knowledge or new friendships, for instance. Or,
To be ready for that. Yeah. Any other inputs?
Yeah, I mean, I would just say that I try to find people who don't think like me, because I already think like me. So I need people who don't think like me if we're going to be a better team and to have more full approach to whatever issue we're working on.
And so now we have picked the right people for the best multicultural teams. And we even have a vision or a goal set before us. How do we prepare these people to work together? Because I think even though they're the perfect match on paper, we need some preparation before they are sent out or before they start working. Can I start with you again, Julia? How do you prepare your dream team?
I started from one phrase. Henry Ford, it's called designer, everyone know, said, coming together is a beginning, remaining together is a progress, working together is success. In my experience, we have some steps to build very success team. First one is a right foundation. It's really, really important in a parachurch organization or in church or in any ministry. And in our experience, we have a prayer meeting together, Bible study together. It's on the regional team level and on the national level. Once a year we have a spiritual retreat, and I learned team leaders every month asked this question: how is your relationship with God? In secular work, nobody asks this, but in here it's very important, really. And every month I ask how I could pray about you. How is your relationship in your family? How is situation in your church? Like that, it's spiritual mentoring. It should be first of all. Second point is connect with first a little bit, but very often we're so focused on the task and forget to build good communication and healthy relationships between each other. If to speak about missionaries, maybe first year or half of year, you should just observe, listen, and to learn everything about culture, about your team member, who is who. Mm-hmm. And it's really important to take time and learn about each other and culture. Mm-hmm. And even in process of ministry, it's very important to have informal time. And we have tradition in our ministry. Once a month, every team have just team day, we call this. Mm-hmm. When we have some team buildings, we go into the park or have picnic or go into the some active things. Mm-hmm. Because it's very, very easy to forget about communication. And I saw in my experience the bad influencer when we focus on the goal and forget about good relationships. And mm-hmm. then, as a result, productivity was less. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And third one is the last one. It's very good accountability. Is really key point. It connects a little bit with first two points, but it's very important to celebrate success each other. It's very important to know what is failures, how I could help you, what I should to help you to develop. But focus on the straight average team. Mm-hmm. But of course, to plan goals together and to know what goals we should focus on this month. And in our ministry, we have writing reports. Mm-hmm. But more value is individual meeting once a month. And me personally, I have rule not do accountability every day or very often, once a month. And it's your like official time to give feedback or ask a question about success or failure, like that. These three things, it's right foundation, healthy communication and accountability.
Let's stay within the IFES context, Siri. Well, how do you prepare? You have a lot of youth sent out for teams. How do you prepare them?
We have. I agree very much with what Julia said, but I can just add that they need to spend time together, as you say. Mm-hmm. And I prepare a young team, and they are a little bit quick, like, mm-hmm. okay, I don't want to spend time with my teammate while I prepare in Norway because I would have plenty of time with my teammate when we come abroad. And I say, not at all. That will not work. Mm-hmm. If you don't learn to know each other before you go on team or before you start working, there will be even more challenging. So to spend time together, as you say, for social things, for prayer, mm-hmm. for devotion, to talk. We send them on a walk and talk. They get a sheet of paper with the questions that they should ask each other, and we force them to walk and talk for 1.5 hours to get to know each other. And this is something that can be done over and over again. And then expectations is also a keyword. To start talking about what do we expect from each other and what do we expect to be the outcome of the teamwork. And for us, we ask them, what expectations do you have for this year on exchange? And that's really important to talk about in a team as well, because maybe the expectations are very different. Like you said, let's be friends. What does it mean? And maybe they have to adjust the expectations towards each other and also towards the outcome of the team. So to talk about expectations many times, very important.
Do you write down team values, team rules? Is that a part of your preparation?
Yeah, we recommend the teams to do that. And also to talk about how do they want to do the team meetings and how often and what should it be? Because not every team meeting can be everything. Sometimes it needs to be Bible study, sometimes it needs to be preparation, sometimes it needs to be just being social, going out for an ice cream or
I'm going to challenge you now to give input to these people. How do you prepare the best multicultural teams? Just short sentences. And you think while Tori is giving input on how they do it in Reach Your Global.
Well, one of the things that we're coming to understand is we don't do this very well. Whether it's multicultural or monocultural, it takes a lot of energy and intentionality. And I realized sitting here listening today that we're very North American in our approach, which, you know, I guess it has its benefits, but I'd say that we're really strong on developing a common vision and values for our team. And some of our teams probably are too far on that end of the spectrum where that is what holds the team together, mainly that. Other teams are much more relational. So they're very, very close relationships, and that's what holds the team together. And we're trying to find that balance, and then how does that balance work out with different cultures? So we've been able to form several teams that are multicultural, but it's been difficult to hold those teams together for very long. So we've seen some success in that, and we've seen some progress in that, but we realize it takes a lot of work and a lot of intentionality to keep that, be able to keep that team together and functioning well.
Is that why you work more on short-term teams, ad hoc teams?
Yeah, well, that's personally because it's just easier, you know, so I always take the easy way.
We have different resources on the team. And Scott, you're responsible for the research part here. What role does resources play in a team, multicultural or not? If all the resources come from, let's say, the States, and you work in another country, and what kind of dynamics and expectations does that give?
Today in intercultural communication, you're seeing people talk about CQ, cultural quotient. And it's analogous to IQ, but they're saying what is your ability to learn and understand and live in a new culture? And I think everybody has a CQ level that they bring to the task, focused in different directions. So when we're thinking resources, often we're thinking monetary or we're thinking intellectual, but we're missing out on the cultural. And I found that some of the people that have the best monetary or intellectual capital don't necessarily have the best cultural capital to bring to the table. And if a team is going to get along, that cultural capital has to be taken advantage of. So who are the people on the team who come from places where relationships are critical and take priority? In what ways can we leverage their ability and the way culture has shaped their ability to help the rest of the team get along? So you've got a Brazilian as opposed to a German, if I can use those two as a contrast set, and the Brazilian is extremely relational and the German might be more extremely business if they're following the stereotypes. But the German will bring financial resources that the Brazilian won't and intellectual capital that the Brazilian won't. They both have things to contribute. So identifying what each team member brings to the table, I think, is a critical piece of that.
You said something about trust being very important to build. Mm-hmm. Is that also a part of the building trust process?
Oh, absolutely. And it is. And I mean, ask yourself, when you think of the people you've worked with over the course of the time, are some simply naturally more trustworthy to you? And those that are, ask yourself why. Is it because they're more likely or like me, or is it even because they're different, but they're different in a way that still generates trust in me? What are the key components of that? I think that's an important thing for me to understand, what it takes for me to trust somebody, but also to have a team work through. I mean, I'll add one minor thing to this. We didn't talk about it as much, but we're very good at making sure people have Bible study skills. But we're not very good at making sure people have culture study skills. They don't have the equivalents of those. And some of these tools, like the Globe Study, are culture study tools. I equip people to study the Bible, but if I don't equip them to study culture, they won't know how to get at the things that others bring to the table, like trust, and how I can build trust.
When we talk about preparation of team or teams, you gave me one input on languages. Do we prepare our teams for a multilingual team building, or is it just Scott was afraid that the English language would be dominating a lot of teams? Is that your experience? You can think about your experience, and I'll ask from Todd and the rest. What's the experience of language using, or which language you use? At ELF, we use English, and. What about the teams that you lead? Yeah.
So generally on the different teams that we have around Europe, if they're predominantly North Americans, then they'll speak English. But we have a few teams that they have their team meetings in the local language because there's an expectation that everybody will be fluent in the local language. I was working with a group of international businessmen when I was still here in Poland, and I kept saying, you know, I don't think I should come to this meeting because you're an international businessman and I'm not really a businessman. They said, yeah, but you're the only native English speaker that we know. And we have our meeting in English, so we want you to be here to be a part of that. So I feel like there's a value to having a trade language like that, but I think there's also a value to, if you're working in a certain culture, to be functioning in that language.
Does it create some power distance using English language?
I think that's if you're working in a specific culture, then that tends to level everything if we're all working in that language. So I could be wrong. I'm just
give me your input on the language used.
Yeah, I can speak for the school and exchange program. We say that we have English as the language at the school, which means that everyone has to speak English, not only in the classroom, but also when we do social activities around the dinner table and so on. And of course there are challenges because we have students that are not very fluent in English, like those coming from South America and some from Asia. So I can see that already from the beginning, some who are very fluent, like East Africans, are very fluent in English, and they kind of dominate very much in the beginning. That is the challenge, and also the Norwegian students. At the same time, we keep this very strong. Speak English, because if you start speaking Norwegian or Nepali or Spanish, you exclude other people around the table or in the fellowship, and it's. People are very sensitive when they are in a new culture. They are very sensitive if people kind of exclude them, even though they have meant to do it or not. Mm-hmm. So I think it's important to have a common language if it's a language that everyone speaks.
Mm-hmm. Scott, what's the possible damage?
Well, the damage is, let's imagine you've got, I can use Todd as an example, and Todd's the only native English speaker. Without him trying to, without him wanting to, it gives him a significant advantage in communicating and knowing the process of communication. A former colleague and I were thinking we should write an article sometime on Robert's Rules of Order and how it can be damaging to people who don't understand that and don't know how to use that in business meetings. So it's not even language, it's what's associated with the language as well, too. And so you think of business meetings and things like that where they take place. Yet at the same time, if English is the only common language of everyone, you don't have much of a choice. But my advocacy would be when you're a local team meeting and all ministering in a local country, wherever possible, the meetings should be in the language of that country so that we privilege the national speakers of the language rather than the expatriates. But I know that doesn't always work. That's a good theory, but it doesn't necessarily work well in real life.
What language do you use in your team meetings?
Very often, English language is our tool to go to the universities or to interest more students. And it's a challenge for foreign people to learn a native language because everyone would you like to speak with them by
English.
But if you want to learn culture, you should learn language. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And now one young couple came to Ukraine and west part of Ukraine, and they learned Ukrainian. It's mm-hmm. very important for this part especially. It's independent. In Kyiv, they speak only English, mm-hmm. because mostly they speak English. Mm-hmm. In another part, not.
I did a mission trip to Ukraine where everyone spoke Russian. So that probably is one of the languages used as well.
Independent from part of Ukraine. Mm-hmm. Some foreign people in Kyiv speak Russian, maybe mostly. From another part, Ukrainian. But now we more try to speak Ukrainian in our situation.
We're talking about some power distance issues here, and mm-hmm. I'm going to touch up on another one before we open the floor for your questions. And that's the gender issue. Mm. In a lot of cultures and last year, we found out that the Eastern European culture is a bit male-oriented when it comes to leadership. So I asked you, Julia, do you want to share how is it to be a female general secretary among all the male pastors and Christian leaders in Ukraine? What's the challenge that you have faced the last 10 years?
Thank you for the question. I'm a leader only nine months, and when board chose for new general secretary, there was eight candidates, only one female, only me, and they chosen me. And I asked God, are you sure I will be good leader? But I believe God could give a gift of leadership as the woman and the man, doesn't matter. But in Ukraine, what I observed is we don't have enough good example of woman leadership. And reason of that is mostly of female leadership try to lead like a man. Mm. It's a bad way. Because if I should lead femininely, like as a woman, because especially with men, if I will be like men with men, they will be gone away from me mm-hmm. very mm-hmm. quickly. Mm-hmm. Um, mm-hmm. It's a challenge is to build a relationship with pastors who are from a Soviet context and with some very conservative churches. But now it's really not a bad situation. Too many churches understand this issue. I am from Baptist church. 10 years ago, they was very conservative. Now, for example, 1 year ago, I came to my pastor, and I was sure only he would say, you shouldn't be the leader. And I came to him, asked, please recommend me something because I am candidate to be a director. And he said, awesome. You should be. Be a church, a power church organization, and doesn't matter, even in church, he encouraged women mm-hmm. to be leaders, and it's mm-hmm. very important. Mm-hmm. But we need more good examples of female leadership. Mm-hmm. And if your leadership will be good, men will respect you. I think so. Not
much. Well, thank you for sharing that. And so what you're saying is that when we send missionaries to the eastern part of Europe, we should challenge that culture of only male leaders. Mm. Do you want to challenge this? Todd is here. Reach globally, send missionaries. What's the challenge you want to give to... How can we try to change that part of the culture? Mm-hmm.
Step by step.
That's a
but
good answer.
We yeah. could influence, really. In IFES, I think we have a healthy approach to grow female leadership. Mm-hmm. And when churches or another Christian saw this example, the opinions about that they change in, by the time. Mm-hmm. But it needs time for that. Of course, sometime if I know this pastor very opposite to female leadership, I will delegate somebody else or will came for this meeting with my colleague who is male. Independent from situation, but I think we should be. In culture, Christian culture is very important, it's connect. But we could influence a step by step all time.
So you give us the mandate to try to change a bit. We have the same party in Norway. Any other comments on that?
So our leader in Ukraine is a woman.
Okay.
It's what you shared is typical in situations where there is strong separation of the gender roles. Mm-hmm. If a woman wants to be taken seriously, she has to act like a man. Mm-hmm. And yet when she acts like a man, she's hated for acting like a man, mm-hmm. or disliked, or she's called names that are inappropriate to say here in public. And it's one of those realities we're still seeing a lot of in the United States today. A woman who acts like a man mm-hmm. is taken seriously but given labels. A woman who doesn't act like a man is not taken as seriously in leadership circles. And so it's what you're saying is mm-hmm. the type of thing we see. And the ability to make a choice to act in a feminine way is a very courageous choice because it goes against the grain of what others would be doing in the culture as well, too. So.
Yeah, but it's very important not to manipulate, not to use your some woman behave to...
Right. Right.
To get some purpose, you understand? And
yeah.
one point I would like to add. Actually, to be a leader as a woman is harder than leadership, male leadership. Because mm-hmm. Sometimes enough to be man and you are another think you are a leader. Mm-hmm. But for women need to work harder to try to set you are gifted, you are... could do this. It's mm-hmm. hard job mm-hmm. to be mm-hmm.
You have a double task,
yes,
rather than a single task. Yeah.
Okay, so thank you, the four of you, for sharing your experiences.